KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome, and we'll be taking the Good Gardening Stroll shortly. But before that, I got a trivia question for Mr. Kelly.
Oh, trivia. You didn't tell me it was trivia.
Yes.
I'm pretty trivial.
Do you know what KMOX stands for?
Christmas gift to Missouri.
Close. Kirkwood for the K, okay. M-O is Missouri, and then the X is for Christmas because it started on Christmas Eve.
Ah, okay.
Tracy found that on the internet somewhere.
Really? Yeah, because the old, you got the K on this side of the river, so that fits in. Although some of the old stations had W's.
That's true.
Yeah, I used to work for a W.
True. Now, another question, too,
yes.
For you. You said there was a storm headed towards your house and
yeah.
was going to drop some rain.
Yeah.
And you had to water because the storm split.
Yeah.
Now, I thought you said you weren't going to be doing any planting this year.
These are just mainly flowers.
Oh, okay.
The tomatoes, and we've got 3 tomatoes, 2 peppers, and a zucchini. They're right in the back, and they're like, we got a hole in the gutter, so they get plenty of water. I tried to patch it. It didn't work. So that area gets plenty of water. This is for more of the other stuff, the flowers.
The aesthetics.
Yeah. I'll show you the video. I tweeted out the video, and this storm literally comes to the house and splits.
Wow.
Completely splits. It's like it said, actually, what I tweeted was I put a force field up, and it works.
That's what I thought.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Man, oh, man.
It's crazy.
Well, it sounds great. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Folks, every Saturday morning we get together to discuss your yard, landscape, garden, your houseplants, raining, watering, and everything else, fertilizing, pruning, bugs, diseases, and removing plants, putting new plants in, or whatever. So it's 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your questions, comments, or concerns. And folks, remember, my words strictly are to open opportunities. After that, it's going to take physical work, mental work, in this great marathon called gardening. So this is your show, and I certainly appreciate you being here. Thanks to Greg. He's producing. He had a week off last week and went up to Springfield to spend some time with his parents. And I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. I've written 5 gardening books, and 2 are currently available at various locations. Also, I write articles for the Missouri Gardener magazine. And during the week and weekend as well, I do landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. So you can go to my website, www.mikemillerdesigns.com. The homepage, there is an email address and a phone number where I can be reached. And today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. What community within the metro area do you think that has the most golf carts parked in front of their house? So in other words, people are using these golf carts to get around this area of town. And that's kind of give you a little insight. In the street, as I pulled up to park, the street tree was filled with green crab apples. Dutch white clover was trying to take over various areas. This park is at 9th and Ann. And as I stepped up from the sidewalk, it led to a gravel path where crepe myrtle and a maple tree were the greeters. Colonizing chartreuse-colored sumac were adding great texture and color. Weeping and blue cypress were there as well. There was great shade trees all over the place. And you look over here, wow, knockout roses. And they say, no, look over there. And you see some bindweed in full flower, white flowers, kind of creeping around all over the place. That led to a concrete walkway, which then went up to a area where the playground was. But also to the left, there's benches and bike racks. The playground has some nice cushioning, so kids can get wild and crazy and probably not hurt themselves too much. A stone wall elevates a planting area, and that includes a couple varieties of maiden grasses, some columbines still in flower. And that's a native columbine, so it has kind of the orange and the yellow flower, the two-toner. The daylilies were in flower, so columbine and daylilies blooming at the same time. This weather has made things really goofy. The iris have finished blooming, but the foliage looks great. White hydrangea, wow, they look striking. The flag hangs, and there's no breeze at all this morning, so it hangs down. And in this park as well, there is this metal sculpture called Terra Madonna. Whoa! If you want to see a really interesting sculpture, head down to check out the Terra Madonna. And Terra Madonna is looking to the southeast. There's Lily of the Valley. They're roaring. Hosta looks a little dry. There's also other sculptures of two lions rolling a ball back and forth between each other. And where is this park? And where is this part of the city where people use golf carts to get around all over the place? I probably saw half a dozen different golf carts all over the place parked in front of the houses. Well, this is Pontiac Square Park, and that is in Soulard. So guess what, folks? Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. I'll tell you what, this year, since we went from a very early spring to summer, the weeds have exploded. I have been to several different houses and in my own yard, my own garden space and everything else. If you don't stay up with them, they're all over the place. The one that I'm finding crabgrass, a lot of it, in the bed spaces. Where'd that seed come from? I do not know. It's driving me crazy. But also a lot of clover too. And I had my yard pretty much in bed spaces weed free. So it just shows you got to kind of stay up with it. It's not like, oh, I'm weed free, so now I don't have to worry about it again. Each year, you're going to have it over and over and over again. Jane lives in Lake St. Louis. Jane, how are you today?
Good morning, Mike. I have in my flower beds some mushrooms sprouting up. I also have white stuff, which looks kind of like marshmallow fluff, and it darkens in color after about 6 days, and then it turns powdery brown. And I'm thinking, just looking on the internet, that I've got a white fungus. And number one, I don't know if I'm doing something wrong. Number two, what do I do about it?
Basically, it doesn't really hurt your plant material.
Ah, okay.
So it's an aesthetic problem more so than anything else. Mushrooms, fungus, any of that kind of stuff only grows on dead material. So whether if it's in your lawn, it's probably growing on dead thatch. So in other words, grass blades that are laying there, or on a tree root that has died, or whatever it happens to be. So in this bed space, I'm assuming you probably have some kind of mulch.
I do.
And the mulch probably wasn't composted correctly, or else you would not have the fungus problem as it is. But again,
Go ahead. I'm also noticing it around the base of my bulbs, my daffodils, and
right.
they're in the process of dying back right now.
Yeah, that probably has nothing to do with the fact that the foliage on the daffodils are dying. So that's not really the a worries, because something as seasonal like that, it just doesn't have the long term impact to be able to set up a scenario where a fungus mushroom can grow. So you can go out there and just kind of rake it around a little bit. And you'll probably have to stay consistent with it as far as it may, let's say, re-erupt and have more of it. But that's kind of what you're looking at.
Oh, okay. And is it just a spring thing, or am I going to have that all summer now?
Well, you may end up with it all summer. It just depends upon how thick your mulch is, how soon your mulch starts imploding or decomposing or things along that line. And it may be a totally different type of fungus a little bit later on in the season.
Oh, okay. Well, super. You're the expert. Thank you very much.
Yeah, my adjectives have played this whole role to the craziness. But anyway, thanks, Jane. And now let's go to Shiloh, Illinois, into Chuck's yard. Chuck, how are you today?
Hey, Mike. Good morning. How are you, sir?
Very good.
I've got a sawtooth oak that was installed professionally by Crane Tree Farm 6 years ago. For all the years except for this year, Mike, the tree is leafed out. Almost 100%, so that there's no dappled shade under the tree. But this year, I'm about maybe 60% leafed out by now, and had an arborist out 2 days ago. The arborist said that he's got sawtooth oak in his yard and is also looking at about the same percentage of leaf out, but is... And it's not chlorosis, because the The arborist took a look at the leaves, and we don't have that issue. But could it be? And I know you don't see it, but could it be something that was related to the winter, or it had an incredible production of seed pods this spring, and I don't know if it ran itself out of juice or what. So, are you seeing anything on sawtooth oaks about this?
No, not necessarily that, but just in general, there are several varieties of trees that don't look as good as they possibly could. Last year, in my own landscape yard, street tree, I have three sugar maples. Two of them look perfect as far as, you know, leafing out and everything else. The third one was very thin and sparse. Now, this year it's back again. So I think you're probably, you know, the arborist was right. This is weather related. And so some of the leaf buds, you know, because they did, you know, the tree did spend a lot of, let's say, energy producing the, you know, the acorns or whatever you want to call them. And so consequently, it just didn't, it's not, you know, let's say, cutting back on the foliage, but that's probably what happened. It was just weather related. Maybe some of these foliage buds were starting to come out. We had a cold snap, and then consequently, it could have killed off some of those foliage buds.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. Yeah. So, and I'm actually seeing now, Mike, I'm actually seeing the tree start to produce its acorns.
Right.
So I guess that could also produce some stress on it because of the energy required to do the acorns.
Right. Exactly. So what you saw earlier were just the flowers. So that's somebody actually called a week or so ago and talked about, you know, raking up all the stuff underneath the oaks and using it as mulch. And I said, well, you could do that, but it disappears pretty quickly, so it's not going to really be an effective mulch. So that's what had fallen earlier, and that's, you know, consequently, anything a tree does, you know, can put some stress on it, especially, you know, whether it's producing acorns or whether it's producing crab apples or service berries or whatever it is.
Okay, super. Thank you, Mike. Yeah, that helps. I mean, having the arborist out obviously is the key, but I just wanted to check with you.
Right. And then also you might think about, just for the future, I don't know how, you know, what your landscaping is or, you know, how your soil is there in Shiloh, but look at something called deep root feeding in the future just to help feed your soil, keep your soil as healthy as possible, because it's really the soil's responsibility to feed your tree. So fertilizing trees is really, I don't want to say a waste of time, but fertilizing your soil with deep root fitting, which means you auger holes and backfill them with compost, is going to be much to the advantage of the tree, way more than, you know, putting fertilizer stakes or something like that in the ground.
Got it. Yeah, I bought one of those augers. You've been mentioning that for years.
Right.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for being on my show, brother.
Thanks for having me on your show. Let's stay in Illinois to save some gas and go from Shiloh to Jerseyville, and that's where Bob lives. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Mike.
How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing well. How are you?
Very good.
And thank you for being there. Two questions. First one is, I've taken out a bunch of shrubs and everything around the house, and I've planted new shrubs. And I have to decide whether to put rock of some sort or to put mulch down all down the front of my house and down the west side and across the back. So is it preferable to use rock or is it preferable to use mulch?
The only disadvantage of rock is they don't compose or decompose. Where mulch, you have to replenish it on a regular basis. So as it breaks down, it's actually enriching the soil, where the rock is not able to do that because it doesn't break down. That's the only disadvantage of using the rock. And depending upon the specific type of shrubs you're trying, sometimes the rock can really heat up in the summertime, especially on the west side of your house if it's in the full sun. So that could do some damage, you know, potentially to some, let's say, more shallow roots on a particular shrub you have planted.
What I've planted on the west side, and it gets, even though it's on the west, it gets about 3 hours of sun because there are trees. My neighbor's trees start shading at somewhere around 4 o'clock.
Okay.
But what I planted is three azaleas.
Ooh.
It's a continual blooming type.
Right.
It's supposed to be able to handle more sun. In the front, I have regular azaleas, but that's the north side.
Right.
And then I have boxwoods on the front, three of those. So But with mulch, the only downside to mulch is I have to replenish it. There's nothing else would be a problem.
No, just make sure you use mulch that has been composted, and also make sure that it doesn't have a high wood content. So in other words, if some, let's say, tree service comes out and somebody's had a lot of tree work and they got a chipper truck full of a lot of chips from the branches where they just ran through the and don't use that stuff at all. You know, use composted mulch. It's going to be to the advantage of your plant material. And especially, you know, with azaleas, because they are a little bit iffy, you know, here, regardless of what the circumstance is.
Okay. Now, St. Louis Composting would sell good mulch, right?
Correct.
Okay. And just as a note, I created two raised gardens, one, and I talked to you about them. And I went over to their facility and acquired the special blend for raised gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not be happier with it.
Well,
it
that's fantastic.
I mean, it is the way to go. Now, quickly, one more question. I have a rhododendron on the east side of the house. I measured it. The very highest is about 8.5 feet tall. And at the width, it's about 7.5 feet from the farthest tip to the farthest tip. I would like to trim that back. Is it okay to trim it? The blossoms, the blooms are falling off right now. It's just recently bloomed, and they're about ready to fall off. Would this be the time to trim it back?
I would say if you have rhododendrons that are that large, you've done a fantastic job. I would not do any pruning. Because if you look at rhododendrons, for the most part, they're going to have only maybe 4, 5, or 6 leaves at the end of each stem. Then everything else on the interior of the shrub is naked. There's no foliage or anything else, even if they're really wildly branched and everything else where there is light. So if you prune them, you're taking a big chance that the buds, not just flower buds, but foliage buds, are dysfunctional. And then consequently, you're going to end up with really a scary, ugly-looking shrub.
Okay. Well, it's kind of that way, but it somehow has decided to start putting on some branches down in the middle. And they aren't suckers. I mean, it's like it's trying to fill in.
Great.
In that area, and assume it's going to bloom there. But that's one of the reasons I want to cut it back, because it does look a little spidery or whatever
right.
The term would be. It's not bad, but and there weren't as the flowers, they weren't as big this year for some reason, and there's quite a few of them, but they were just about 3/4 the normal size
right.
that they get.
And that's
okay.
Weather related.
Okay. So you think I've done a wrong thing in planting these azaleas on the west side of the house there?
Well, not necessarily. It's just, you know, if your neighbor's trees are close by, then there's going to be a lot of root systems from the trees. You know, that's going to be competition for the newly installed things, and azaleas are a little bit on the cusp anyway, so that's why I'm saying that.
Okay, and so mulch would be better for them than rock?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for your help. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks, Bob, for having me on your show. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. If you have zoysia lawn, you should be doing your second fertilizing on your lawn. You did one a little bit earlier when it was just starting to green up. Well, not just as it was starting to green up, but the second fertilizing is going on now. And also, you've probably noticed if you have knockout roses or regular roses, probably the first flush is finished. So in other words, I mean, there's still some, you know, really nice looking flowers, but, you know, you're still getting some petal drop on the other flowers. This is the time, again, to feed your roses. So with each flush, you want to refeed your roses, and I always recommend using a fertilizer that's specifically formulated for that particular plant group, whether it's tomatoes, whether it's roses, or whatever it happens to be. So just, you know, roses and zoysia feed. Now, if you've got fescues or bluegrasses, do not feed them, because you could cause some stress, you could cause some growth, and you could really create a fungus nightmare. So a lot of times if we fertilize out of sequence, particularly with, you know, if you're, let's say, a home gardener or like me, it does a lot of the stuff yourself or all of it like I do. But anyway, do not feed cool season lawns this time of year at all. And your spring flowering shrubs, this is the time to prune them. Except I really hesitate, like I was talking to the gentleman from Jerseyville, on pruning any kind of azalea, any of those rhododendrons, any of those things from that family group, because that group of plants has such a difficult time here. You prune them and you could really create a nightmare. And the reason why I'm saying this about the azalea slash rhododendrons, when I started in the woodland garden at the botanical garden in 77, the woodland garden had just been done in 76. So consequently, they had 11 varieties of azaleas and really only a couple of them survived those 4 years I was there. Now you could say, well, it's because Mike Miller killed them. No, it really wasn't. Is there something you got to talk about, Brian? Uh-oh. It looks
We have a severe thunderstorm warning.
Where?
It's pretty far to the north, but it does include northern Lincoln County, along with western Pike County in Illinois, Missouri counties of Rawls, eastern Audrain, northern Montgomery, southeastern Marion, northeastern Callaway, and Pike County in Missouri. This storm at 8:31 along a line extending from near Hannibal to near Spencerburg to near Wellsville, moving east at 40 miles an hour. You might see 60-mile-an-hour wind gusts and quarter-sized hail, and this is in effect. I cut that part off for a little while. So, severe thunderstorm warning, 60-mile-an-hour winds, quarter-sized hail.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Brian. Greatly appreciate it.
Oh, until 9:15.
Oh, 9:15.
Yeah,
so you didn't cut it off.
I didn't cut it off. It's right there.
So you got about 45 minutes or so.
Right.
Okay, great. Well, thanks.
You bet.
And now let's go to Wentzville, and that's where Barb lives. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Mike. I'll be brief on every subject. The maple trees and the catches that are 15 years old that have not filled out all the way, partially, this year, will the chance they come back next year?
It's probably pretty good now. If we're talking about, you know, full branches or limbs that have no leaves on them, are we just talking about how, you know, they're not really thick and dense with foliage?
No, areas of full branches that haven't flowered out.
Okay, if they haven't leafed out by now, cut those off because they're probably not going to do anything.
They're 15-year-old big trees.
Yeah.
Okay. One main problem is when I fill my pots, and I have a lot of them, maybe 15 big pots.
Whoa.
That when I fill them with flowers so that they look nice and full, within a short time, like now, they get this black, mushy, gooky stuff down at the base. Why?
It's probably the potting mix you're using. Your potting mix is probably holding on to too much moisture, and that's what that's what's happening.
I used the good kind.
Okay, so you use potting mix, not potting soil.
No, potting mix. Like
yeah,
you
so
always.
Yeah, like I always promote. But if you're seeing, just stir it up a little bit. It's probably the moisture content, and maybe stop watering quite as much, even though you've had great success with them for all the years. Just let the soil, the potting mix dry out a little bit before you water again.
Okay, that was the next question, that I water every day.
Oh,
it'd be better to let them go dry.
Right.
Okay? If I cut, it's not a fungus, huh? Fungus spray won't help?
Nah, I wouldn't bother. It's not really going to do that much. Most of the fungicides are for, on foliage and things like that. There are some soil drenches that you might use, but I wouldn't waste my time, to be honest.
I'll put water in. If I trim lilac now in about a week, is it too late?
No, no, no. You got plenty of time. You got all the way up probably until, let's say, mid-July or so. After that, I wouldn't do any pruning.
Okay. Big help as usual. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, and thanks, Barb. And let's go over to Ronnie's yard, and Ronnie lives in St. Elmo, Illinois. Hi, Ronnie.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you. Hey, I'm about 80 miles straight east of you, just off Interstate 70. Now, I got a little trail down through my pasture, and me and a dog were walking down there today. And I saw a little walnut tree, maybe trunk was 4 or 5 inches in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
And just look at that. There was a branch coming off of this tree. About a foot from the branch, and this is about shoulder high, about a foot from the end of the branch, there were three groups. It looks kind of like baby bananas. Now, they weren't hanging on it. I looked, there's a stem coming out. Now, these things are about, there's three of them. They're about an inch and a quarter long, about an eighth of an inch wide. And They're kind of a real light yellow or a white. And there's three groups of about 30, give or take, all coming off of this walnut tree branch. Do you have any idea what that is?
It's a little tough. Now, are they actually dangling down, or are they stuck to the branch?
They are kind of dangling down off their own stem. Their stem comes out of the branch.
So this is not, you know, obviously you know what bagworms are. So this is not bagworms or something like that.
No.
And they didn't.
Like three small groups of bananas.
Yeah, they didn't move at all. The only thing I could think of is maybe it's a type of fungus. What I would probably do is, you probably have a county extension agent. I would, you know, either take a picture or just take them, you know, take a couple of them off and then take it to the county extension and let them take a look at them.
I will do that because I've roamed around. I'm 71 years old. I've roamed these trees for years. I never saw anything like this.
It sounds scary to me.
Okay, Mike.
Well, thanks, Ronnie.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's a little tough without seeing it, but my guess is it's some type of fungus. And if it was stuck to the branch, then I would say it could be insect eggs. But since they're dangling, then that's not the case.
They're dangling, just like bananas.
Wow. That sounds wild. So thanks, Ronnie. And now let's go to Diane, and she lives in St. Louis County. Hi, Diane.
Well, good morning, Mike. How's your day?
Very good.
Okay, I have got a very serious problem with poison ivy. I got a bank alongside of my house, and I got ivy growing in there so the bank don't wash away.
Mm-hmm.
I got loads of poison ivy in there. Now I looked in my flower beds. I'm starting to get some in my flower beds. I got one in my bush alongside my house.
Oh, my.
I called four different nurseries. The stuff that they got will kill plants, which I can't do. I don't want to kill that poison ivy.
Right.
I even called Botanical Garden, and the lady told me they got some kind of stuff out of the gel, and you got to take a paintbrush and do the leaves. Well, it'll take me all summer, and I'm scared of it because I got some poison ivy on my arm.
Right.
So I don't know what to do. I don't want to kill that ivy.
To be honest with you, that's what I was going to say, is basically you're going to have to, you know, just work on once. I would start on my shrubs and things like that first and, you know, get that gel and paint it on. You know, I always just say you can use any kind of all-purpose systemic type herbicide like Roundup, but the gel will work, and just paint it on each individual leaf. And I mean, it's going to be a nightmare, but that's about the only way when you've got poison ivy tangled up with other stuff. There's nothing that's going to be selectively just killing the poison ivy without damaging other plants.
Aw.
Unless you just paint it directly onto the poison ivy leaf.
Yeah, but then I'll get poison ivy. I even had a long-sleeve shirt on, and I got it on my
arm. Do you wear rubber gloves, and you're just going to have to be much more cautious. So, I mean, you can, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. It'll start getting the beads on the leaves and things like that, and that's when it's highly toxic if you're sensitive. I'm highly sensitive to poison ivy. I've had some major, you know, let's say, bouts with it in my, you know, my entire life. So, you just have to be real cautious.
Yeah, I see some beads on it.
Yeah, you know? Ooh.
Now, will that go away, those beads?
No, well, that basically is saying, you know, this is the most toxic this leaf is going to be. So, yeah, when the leaf falls off, that stuff will fall off. But that's what that's sort of signaling, like, it's been really hot. Usually they don't get them until later in the summertime as far as on the foliage. But because it's been so warm, that's what's triggered this change, you know, kind of accelerated certain things.
Oh, yeah, I got a problem there.
Yep.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Sure, sorry.
I'm going to try you because you know everything, you know? So,
no, I know a lot of adjectives.
Thanks, Mike. You have a good weekend.
Yeah, you do the same. Yeah, once you know, it's unfortunate because, you know, you got to kind of stay up with watching things if you got potential problems with poison ivy, because if you've got it in this many places, you know, that's going to be a lot of work for a long period of time. And a lot of the contractors won't fool around with it because, you know, their staff can get it and they, you know, so anyway, there's not too much can be done. Let's go to Jim, and Jim lives in South County. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Mike. I have a question on Martha Washington geraniums. This is the third year I planted them.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't get them to bloom. They're beautiful green bush type plant. They're doing fine, but I can't get them to bloom.
Basically, they don't like it here.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, the nurseries will sell them, and a lot of times they'll sell them in flower, but they don't like our weather. They don't like, if you lived in, you know, a place like Southern California where it's cooler or something like that, they do much better, or Chicago, but here they just don't like it.
Okay, and I do have them in full sun. Maybe that's the issue. But the last 2 years, they were beautiful.
Yeah, so you know, if you had good luck with them for 2 years, congratulations, because they don't, like I say, they just don't, they're not long-lived or anything else for the most part.
I see. Do you think it would do any better if I moved them and moved them into a partial sun?
You could try it, but I don't, you know, with the way the heat's been,
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's where the trouble comes.
Okay, well, I lucked out the last 2 years. Well, I'll be darned.
You never know. Well, thanks, yeah. Jim.
Thank you, Mike.
Yep, Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
I don't think we've been to St. Charles all day. Let's go over to Phillip's yard. Phillip, what's going on?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, yeah. Listen, I've got a watering system, a sprinkling system for my yard,
mm-hmm.
and I'm trying to figure out how many times and duration to water. And I think I was listening to you last year, and you were saying 40 minutes twice a week. Did I hear that, or?
Yeah, you know, pretty close. I mean, time-wise, it just depends upon your system. But basically, you don't want to water every day because that just creates a fungus problem on all kinds of things, in your lawn, on your plant material, in lots of different places. You want to water longer periods of time so it can drive the water in deeper to really help, you know, I don't want to say saturate, but try, you know, to moisturize your soil. And that's basically what the plant material needs for the root system. So less often. But basically what you need to do is put some kind of, let's say, bottle or something out there, run it for a period of time, and within every 7 days, depending upon your system, you want to have an inch of water that hits the ground in your landscape. So if it's twice a week, you know, for 40 minutes, that would be perfect. I wouldn't just necessarily run it for, let's say, an hour and a half once a week, but I would run it, you know, so that way you don't get so much runoff. But twice a week for like 40 minutes, that would probably work out well.
Okay, and one more thing for the lady with the, what she called in, and I've forgotten what it is now. the plant that makes itch, what is it?
Poison ivy.
Yeah, okay. I don't know how to get rid of the plant itself, but I know a tree trimmer, and the tree trimmer every day when he gets home from work, he washes down with Clorox.
Whoa.
And he says he never catches it.
Really?
Yeah, I've for the last several years done the same thing if I thought I was in some poison ivy.
Right.
And it works.
Well, that's perfect. What I do is just if I think I've been in contact with it, I wash, but I don't necessarily use Clorox. I just use dishwashing soap. But, you know, thanks for the, you know, insight on from your perspective.
Just keep the Clorox in the garage and then with a rag and just wipe down your arms and hands
right.
and whatever exposed areas there are. It works. It absolutely works.
Sounds
thanks
perfect.
Thanks for your help.
Well,
yeah.
Thanks. Thanks, Philip. And now let's go over to Collinsville, and that's where Gary lives. Hi, Gary.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
I got a question, two questions, matter of fact. I've got an arbor, a walk-through arbor, and I was wanting to know, I'd like to plant some kind of a flowering vine there, and that would be blooming through the year. And would be a pre-annual. And then you mentioned something about a couple of weeks ago before you was on vacation or was gone for the week about bonite that you can use in your garden for weeds.
Right.
Would that be something that I could use around my asparagus? Or is that something that you got to keep off the plants?
Bonite has a couple weed killers, so I don't know specifically which one. But just go to your favorite garden center and ask them, you know, and they'll tell you which one that you know can be used in that situation. So that's kind of what you're looking at. And as far as your first question was related to
what kind of a flowering vine that I could use on a walk-through arbor?
Is it sunny or shady?
Sunny.
Sonny, I would probably look at the red trumpet honeysuckle vine.
Okay, red trumpet honeysuckle, huh?
Right. So it's not, it doesn't look like the classic honeysuckle flower. It's a trumpet-shaped flower, relative to probably an inch or an inch and a quarter long. And it's really truly not red, but it's, you know, orangish red. So I would use that. The foliage is, you know, evergreen. Now it's only going to flower, obviously, during this basically summertime. But, you know, it's a great, tough, durable vine.
Okay. And it's something that will come back every year.
Yeah, it's a perennial.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you very much then.
Certainly. Thanks, Gary. And sorry, anyway. John lives in St. Charles. No, John lives in Chesterfield. Hi, John.
Good morning. Hey, I got a fairly small backyard, and only about 20 by 50 feet is lawn, zoysia. Now we got a new puppy, and she's decorating the lawn. Not every time, but when she pees, it turns, we got a round circle. Anything I can do about that?
Basically, you can get some gypsum and then follow around every time she goes to the bathroom and put the gypsum. There's really not too much, to be honest. I mean, this is just, you know, kind of the, you know, circumstance there is. There are some products that are out there. I only mention things that I know have really worked, at least in multiple occasions, not just one. So there are some products available. You might go online and just look at it. But for the most part, this is just kind of, you know, what having a dog does, and especially a female. Apparently the alkalinity, or, you know, let's say content of their urine, is different than the male, but that's why the problem happens.
If I got something just to raise the pH, that would help?
No, you don't want to raise the pH because that's going to cause more problems.
Oh, I thought you said.
No, the pH, you want to gypsum down, but that's why the urine is causing this problem, because the pH of the dog urine is so high, it's burning holes into your lawn.
Okay. Will that grass come back?
No.
But so, and zoysia, so I'm...
Right. Now, some of the surrounding grass may fill in, but, you know, there might be a spot right next to it where she goes to the bathroom, and then that spot's dead. So there's not, I mean, there's really not too much you can do, to be honest. I mean, there are products that are out there. You can go online and check them out as far as, you know, neutralizing, you know, the alkalinity of female dog urine, and you give it a try. But like I said, I have not seen it being all that successful.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yep. Sorry.
Okay.
And let's see. I don't know. No, I was going to say, maybe we can get another one in really quick, but we better not. Just take a look. Walk around in your yard on a routine basis and just watch the, like I said, I was talking about earlier, the weed explosion has just been phenomenal this year because, you know, the way the weather was, the temperature got so warm so quick, it triggered all the weed, you know, the warm season weeds. All the cool season weeds, the henbits and all those guys, they're long gone because it got so hot. But, you know, the warm season weeds, they just like, usually they kind of trickle. But this year it was like explosion. So I have another hour. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. See you after the news.